present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC News website, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Prostitution in Cheltenham is to be examined at a one-day public inquiry. Council officials said they wanted the hearing to find out what work was being done by various bodies and how that could be improved.
And our thanks to Peter Baxendale for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Sarah Milliken. Opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Fred McCauley. Andy, have a listen to this.
Moving, just keep moving, till I don't know what to say.
Andy, who has shuffled his jokers out of the pack?
Jeremy Hunt is now...
Very well said.
Jeremy Hunt is now the health secretary. I'm going to repeat that, just so that we all have time to take in the enormity of that statement. Right? Jeremy Hunt is now the health secretary, which means that the person responsible for the well-being of the British people is now Jeremy Hunt. And what that means is that, statistically speaking, if we base it on his previous record of competence as a minister, we can safely predict that this time next year, 78% of the population of Great Britain will have died.
Do you think the plan is to kill off so many people that we no longer have to worry about the unemployment figures? Do you think that's the...
Well, maybe that's it. I mean, I can understand the problem Cameron had. Andrew Lansley was health secretary and he was deeply unpopular. But, I mean, why did he go with Jeremy Hunt? I mean, presumably Anders Breivik was unavailable. I don't know. But the man is a laughingstock. I mean, you're talking about a man whose judgment is so appalling that he chooses to have a haircut favoured by 11-year-old boys. You're talking about having a secretary for health who believes in homeopathy and the integrity of Rupert Murdoch.
They said that Jeremy Hunt delivered the Olympics. No, he didn't. Mo Farah and Jessica Ennis delivered the Olympics. Perhaps Hunt rang up Murdoch and asked News International to go a bit soft on the Olympics and not demand that Mo Farah be deported back to Somalia just before the competition. But he didn't do anything, did he?
You did get a sense he got health secretary because that was the chair he was in when the music stopped, didn't you?
Yes, had super glued his trousers to the seat. As they kept saying, they couldn't move him. He just refused to go. He chained himself there as a protest, didn't he? Shackled himself.
There were some corking people. The new environment secretary, Owen Paterson, is a climate change sceptic, so that's perfect. The new transport secretary, Patrick McLaughlin, has got a fear of flying, which is...
Cameron was very excited about Patrick McLaughlin because he used to be a miner. He said, we've got an ex-miner. I thought, well, thanks to the Tories, there's plenty of ex-miners to choose from, aren't there?
Do you know how they get talked? Do they all go in a room together and, like, I imagine they all have name badges with their jobs on?
What do you think? And they go, step forward, everybody who's a cabinet minister. Hang on, Ken Clark. If you had a job, Sarah, which one would you have in the game? Which one would you fancy?
I'd just be the tea lady, probably. Because that's, I think, the most important part of it, because that's what keeps everybody happy, isn't it?
And that, what was that film, Love Actually, when the tea lady shags the Prime Minister? That must be quite a good part of the...
Oh, well, maybe I've changed my mind. Right.
The bit that worries me is that David Cameron has hinted that the government could support a third runway, and I think a U-turn on a runway is very dangerous.
Runway work, because you've got one for landing on, one for taking off. Where's the third one? Just for
drinks.
All right.
Do you think a Tory reshuffle, you have a sort of sense of them using cards with the tarot symbol of death on sitting there?
Yeah, but I had your tarot cards written.
No, have you?
I had them done once and I got a naked card and I got really excited because I was quite an old virgin and and I went, oh, and she said, it's just new beginnings.
Cameron has announced his first major reshuffle, promoting Jeremy Hunt to health and moving Andrew Lansley to Leader of the Commons. There was irony in some appointments, with Nick Clegg staying in the Cabinet the same week that squatting became illegal. The new Health Secretary believes in homeopathy. Given his inability to recall meetings with Murdoch, this suggests that water has a better memory than he does. 2 points to Andy. Sarah, who is building on their hopes of an economic recovery?
Oh, this is the planning reforms, yeah. Is it? Oh, sorry.
Have we given you a less than exciting question?
A little bit. They're going to make it easier for companies to build and for people to get on the property ladder. And I think parents everywhere must be clapping their hands because there's a lot of people in their 30s moving back in. I watched a clip of Cameron saying it's going to be much better for all the people. And you think, yeah, it's not just the kids that are moving out, it's the parents that get to have sex again, you know.
Yes.
They must be clapping their hands. Oh, no, sorry. Oh, no, are you appalled at that thought? No, wait, that's why we keep the children in the house, because we don't want to have to do that. I understand.
I think this is fine, though, don't you? I think Cameron and Osborne should be able to do what they like with the countryside. I mean, don't their families own most of it? I think it's fine.
Well, with the changes in planning, Cameron will now be able to knock through into Gloucestershire, won't he? It is a nightmare, the whole planning thing, because you know you can have a basement. If you haven't got a basement, you can have one excavated, and we thought we would do that, and we got some ridiculous objection from the woman in the downstairs flat. Saying it would intrude into her living space or something like that. But it's not going to boost the economy because the local government association said there's already 400,000 houses that have been signed off and haven't been built yet because they can't afford to build them because they know they're not going to be able to sell them because no one's got any money.
Well, building only stimulates the economy provided you employ bad builders. Mm. Our bathroom was done up a couple of years ago by a useless builder. So now we've got a different set of builders in making good the damage that he did. So that's twice the economic stimulation, that's twice the employment. So you know, if we have good builders building extensions and stuff, stuff that lasts, the economy will just stagnate. So we need as many cowboy builders as possible.
And DIY SOS would come off the air, Nick Knowles would be redundant.
It's a plus.
I didn't understand the whole thing about building on the green belt, though. Isn't that the thing they want to build on the green belt? You can't build on the green belt because, I mean, every 30 minutes a high-speed train will smash through it. And the government has announced a relaxation of planning rules for construction firms and will consult on the relaxation of rules for home extensions in a bid to boost the economy. David Cameron and Nick Clegg made the announcement in Number 10's Rose Garden, where Cameron also unveiled blueprints for the new kennel Clegg will sleep in. Instead of a basket in the kitchen. Critics are saying it's not planning permission that stops builders, but finance. Apparently, builders already have a backlog of 400,000 plots they can use. Better them than Dan Brown, so good luck with that. 2 points to Sarah. Jeremy, which sporting event has set a personal best?
Well, the Paralympics.
Yes.
Paralympics has been very inspiring. All these people who have overcome the fact they've got a government who hates and stigmatises them and takes their money off them in order to become champion athletes. But you do watch it sometimes thinking, well, hang on a minute. All these people are really good at sport. Should there not be an event for those of us who are just rubbish? You know, because I'm looking at them thinking, yeah, I can see you've got various, you know, levels of impairment, but what about those of us who are just clumsy, lazy, uncoordinated, have no dedication, you know, a bit asthmatic, don't really care about sport, kind of prefer thinking, you know...
Well, why I think is that it's a disability, isn't it? Indifference is an...
It's all been very inspiring. Even I have been encouraged to take up athletics because of the summer of sport. My personal best in the 100 metres is very nearly 50 metres at the minute.
Was that in one day?
No. Overall.
Oh, yeah.
You've just got to make your fridge further away from the sofa.
That's the answer.
But it was what the high point of the whole thing was the booing of Osborne. What's interesting about this is because people are angry. The athletes are angry about Atos, the French company, being brought in to take their benefits away and all of this, and they're one of the sponsors of the Paralympics, which is making people annoyed. And 80,000 people booing Osborne. I thought, well, that's interesting, because when Cameron was presenting a medal, he didn't really get booed that much. I thought, that's because people know is Osborne running the country. There's no point booing Cameron. I mean, that's just like shouting at the television. It's the remote you should be shouting at.
Do you think some of the international athletes got confused and assumed that booing George Osborne was part of our national anthem?
So he'll never be able to go anywhere in the world again, because he'll think, we must respect British culture. Let's boo that horrid weirdo. Oscar Pistorius, though.
Yes, Oscar Pistorius.
Now, you see, this raises a very interesting point, because he had this big flounce about the fact that your other fella, his blades were long, and therefore he was taller. And I thought, well, that's an interesting point. But it does rather point out that in the Olympics, taller people have an advantage by virtue of the fact that they're tall. That's why wheelchair basketball is much better and more exciting, because with the regular basketball, they might as well just measure them and give the tallest team the point. Usain Bolt is much taller than Blake. I think Blake is actually faster. He's just got shorter legs. Michael Phelps is the length of an Olympic swimming pool.
The athletes who use those blades, they have to generate twice the explosive power in their buttocks. Can you imagine how...
Sprouts. Sprouts would be that.
Have you seen that insanely violent murder ball, they call it? It's wheelchair rugby. Have you seen this? Okay, this is great. There's a woman, Kylie Grimes. She's Britain's only female player. This is a genuine quote. Her mum, Karen McGee, explained, "At first I was nervous when I watched her, but now I don't worry. As she says, she's already broken her neck, so there's not much worse that can happen."
I went to see the weightlifting at the Olympics, and it was £65 for the cheapest ticket, and gasp indeed. And one of the guys came out, lifted a weight 7 kilos heavier than he'd ever tried before, got it up, and he dislocated his shoulder.
Oh.
Right? And then two of the volunteers got up and unfurled the banner across the front so that the people couldn't see him writhing in agony. I was in the cheap seat, I saw the lot. The next guy, he got it up, and he had a stress fracture in his wrist, and he dropped the weights. And I was thinking, God, if the next one has an anal prolapse, I've got the... I've got the Ladbrokes treble.
So you were the Olympic albatross, weren't you?
The London Paralympics have been hailed as the most successful ever after record ticket sales and audience figures. A slew of medals for British Paralympians sees them second in the table behind China. The Paralympics has shown the world that disabled people can achieve amazing things and shown the government that they're fit for work and can have their benefits cut. Channel 4 has seen record viewing figures for its coverage, with the slower athletes covered on Channel 4 Plus 1. The closing ceremony is called Festival of Flame and involves setting light to George Osborne. 2 points to Jeremy. Fred, who is so cross about their rights they've gone all the way to Strasbourg?
This is religious intolerance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Happy days.
Hey Fred, you should take your sash off, really.
Well, it is. Come on, I'm on my walking holiday. I'm not accepting the label of bigotry. I'm not of that either persuasion of where, you know, Glasgow, a city divided by religion and two divisions. 4 people have gone to the European Court, I think. One of them was a lady who had a cross hanging out, and her employer said, you can't go walking about with a cross hanging out like that. Whether it gets upheld or not, I don't know, but if it does, it's obviously going to have an effect on vicars. Yeah, you can't go to work with one of them on. They're really stumped.
But the woman, she was a BA staff, wasn't she? Here's the thing. This is me, OK. I do not want to be greeted by BA staff wearing articles of any religion. If I'm about to climb onto a very big mechanical bird and go up into the sky, I don't want any impression that faith is going to play a significant role in the outcome. It's just not my thing.
You don't want a pilot who believes in the afterlife,
not
do you?
Not particularly.
I mean, in general, obviously, if somebody wants to exhibit their religious faith, that's absolutely fine. But there's been the cases with nurses, and they said, well, you can't do that because it's dangling. It could get in a wound or something. You couldn't have somebody whose religious faith said, oh, could you insert this thermometer? They said, no, I demand to use the one from the side of the church. And they start shoving that. But it's different if you're saying you can't display your religious belief than saying there were cases where, like, there was a registrar who said, oh, I can't marry gay people because there's a proof of people being gay. I think, well, then you can't do your job properly. Mm. Your job is to marry. It's like, I've been a best man twice, but I've said, I will be your best man on condition that you don't marry her, because that's not going to last. And in one case, I would have been right.
I do think it's very short-sighted of the church not to marry lesbians, because, honestly, let's face it, give us the tools, we could build one ourselves. I think it's...
It's also a matter of common sense, isn't it, and discretion. And, I mean, a lot of it depends on the size of the cross, doesn't it? I mean, if it's discreet and small, I don't see a problem. Obviously, if it's the size of the original...
Yeah.
..then... and that's a little bit ostentatious.
It depends how you wear it as well, yeah. Doesn't it, really?
Like, yeah, if you've got the long bit pointing up, then that's not right, is it?
No.
No.
So could a Satanist argue they were being persecuted if their employer said you can't wear your ram's head to work? Depend on the job, I suppose, like what Jeremy says. If it's
if it's going to drip in somebody's dinner or something, that's...
Yeah, if it's a vegetarian restaurant, it's unsuitable.
So if a Satanist, Andy, goes to the job centre...
Is this the beginning of a joke?
Yeah.
Highly unlikely. And he's got his ram's head on, and the job centre said, well, actually, we've got a job for you. It's a barman. Take yourself along to the ram's head.
What if you put down on the census that you're a Jedi? What do you wear for a Jedi? Thick glasses and a resigned look of virginity. What is the...
That would be a good one, though. If you said, why can't I take my lightsaber into work?
Yeah.
And you sat there behind your desk going...
Was the other things? There was a man who would... There was a relationship counsellor.
Yeah, he was accused of not providing counselling to same-sex couples, which is, I think, part of the problem with couples in sex therapy, isn't it? That the sex is the same. I think that's the...
Was it the sex therapy aspect of it that he objected to? Because that just means if you're squeamish, then you shouldn't be, you know, well, I can't give people advice on sex. Because ew. He did well. What there?
The European Court of Human Rights is considering the cases of four British employees who claim they were discriminated against for their Christian beliefs. In court, government lawyers argued that if you feel victimised, get a job where being a Christian isn't important, like Chief Rabbi. 2 points to Fred. At the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Sarah have got 4 points, but so too have Jeremy and Fred. We start round two with a listing from the Radio Times.
8 p.m. Undercover Undertakers. In this dispatches report examining the funeral industry, Jackie Long investigates what happens to the bodies of our loved ones after they die. 8:30 p.m. Gok cooks Chinese.
And our thanks to Mary Wright for sending us that. Andy, who was first to back Barack's bid for the White House?
Well, this is his wife, because Barack Obama is in trouble. Mm. You know, the economy is flatlining and unemployment in America just keeps rising. The one thing he has got going for him is the Republicans, who have somehow managed to choose the most unelectable candidate they could possibly have found. They've chosen as their candidate a business shark who does actually look like a shark. The wives very much made the running this week, but there were some odd quotes from the pair of them. Ann Romney, her speech for her husband, said, "This is a man who does not fail," which is patently a lie, because he has already failed to successfully dye his hair. But but also, she should be careful, because the Pope might sue her for breach of copyright, I think. And then Michelle Obama came out with this very weird statement. She said, "I love my husband more than I did 4 years ago." which was very odd. I thought, what does that mean? Does she mean the sex is better with bodyguards watching? What does that mean? Or, you know, sometimes he lets me play with the drones. I don't know.
But do you think anybody's ever convinced by these things? Do you think a voter thinks, well, his wife thinks he's all right, I'll vote for him?
I got curious as to why Romney was called Mitt. I thought, is it short for Mitchell or something? But Mitt is his middle name. Do you know what his Christian name is?
No.
Willard. He is Willard Mitt Romney. He kept that quiet, didn't he? Was that not the dog in EastEnders?
It's Willard.
Oh, Willard. Oh, yeah. Willard.
The Republicans have got really odd people campaigning for them. They always have the action heroes. And I was online, I found a video of Chuck Norris and his wife saying that if the people vote for the Democrats, we will entering 1,000 years of darkness. And they appeared to be in a martial arts studio, and there were white cloaks hanging up. You couldn't tell if they were judo outfits or Ku Klux Klan robes.
But don't you think that was just promote his new DVD, 1,000 Days of Darkness? I watched a bit of Bill Clinton's speech, and he said that the voters have to decide whether they want a society that's like, oh, we're in this all together, or winner takes all. And I thought, well, obviously we know which side ABBA we're on.
Michelle Obama closed the opening night of the Democratic Convention this week with a speech backing her husband Barack Obama's campaign to remain in the White House until 2016. Michelle said that being president doesn't change who you are, it reveals who you are, much like being a young royal on holiday in Vegas. 2 points to Andy. Sarah, why will Big Brother now be watching the opera?
This is the new chairman of the Arts Council, mm-hmm. Sir Peter, I don't know how to say it, is it Balzaghetti?
Bazalgette, yeah.
Really? Balzaghetti's better. Yeah, can we change it?
Bazalgette sounds like an aeroplane engine which runs on herbs, doesn't it?
Is he head of Endemol, I think?
Yeah, he came up with the whole Big Brother thing.
But is he going to use the Big Brother style when he's making cuts like, you know, opera, theatre, film?
Who goes? You decide.
I was surprised when they said that he was responsible for Big Brother. I thought, well, so what? George Orwell was thinking, I've got this novel set in the future. England is run by a parliamentary democracy. He said, no. You want Stalin is tyranny.
Do you think that he stole maybe the first draft of 1984 said, you know, Winston Smith says, day one. Maybe that's how it began.
If I were in charge of the Arts Council, I'd spend all our money on one of those opening ceremonies every week. I think that would be great.
Yeah, I only saw the end bit.
The NHS bit, that bit?
No, just Paul McCartney.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you know what? My partner and I watched the whole thing, and all the way through we're going, well, it's not too bad, and at least Paul McCartney's not singing. We got to the... We got to the very end, we both went, no!
Did a CD playing when Paul McCartney was meant to sing? Was there a kind of glitch?
Yeah, something went wrong.
Hey Jude, and then he came in as well, and then you heard it kind of going.
I think it was a shift in space-time continuum. His younger self, trying to remind him of a time when he wasn't crap.
Maybe that's just what happens to electricity when everybody turns their tellies off at once.
Sir Peter Bazalgette, the man who brought Big Brother to the UK, is to become the chair of the Arts Council England. His appointment was one of Jeremy Hunt's final acts as Culture Secretary. Apparently, he was torn between that and leaving a fish behind the radiator. Despite bringing Big Brother to the UK, Bazalgette is also a big fan of opera, saying he loves her talk show and never misses an episode. 2 points to Sarah. Jeremy, who got caught committing the crime of sock puppeting?
Sock puppeting. Oh, yes. I know this. Remind me. remind me by means of the answer.
Sock puppeting. Even I know this. It's an internet term. Sock puppeting is when you pretend to be... Why am I giving you the answer? Does anybody else know the
fake
answer?
Fake reviews.
Oh, yes. No, pretending to be somebody else. I didn't see the term. I couldn't remember what it was.
Pretend to be somebody else on the internet.
On the internet. Writes his own reviews. But everyone does things like that. It's like if you wrote a review of The Iron Lady saying, Meryl Streep is fantastic, so what the hell is she doing in this execrable bit of plop, then the people who are promoting the film would take the bit where it says Meryl Streep is fantastic and legitimately use that. And when you see this all over the West End, the costumes are fantastic. They cut the bits as pity they were draped over stiffs who can't act. And that's what you do. I had a book come out a couple of years ago and I needed a quote for the cover and I rang Sandy, said, Sandy, I need a quote. She said, oh, I don't know. Say comic genius. And I said, all right, okay, I'll have that. Now, I use that all the time. It's on my posters. She said it under pressure because she knows me. She doesn't think I'm any good, but we're mates, so, you know, she had to say that. So
can I just say I never read the book?
Nobody did, but, you know, all these things are just subterfuge and artifice. I mean, but what he did do was he attacked other people. That's unforgivable. But then, you know, people don't mind writers having false names. Like that bloke who used to be in the SAS who writes that drivel, you know. He calls himself Andy McNab. But of course, he can't reveal his real identity, which is Colin Perkins of 73, Gladstone Avenue, Penge, because he might be assassinated by people. I've written loads of stuff under assumed names, like Gore Vidal was one of mine. Samuel Beckett, that was another one of mine.
Yeah, it's not new, is it? Walt Whitman did it. Mm. Walter Scott was accused of doing it. And the sock puppet thing, you know, creating a false identity so that your programmes can be... I mean, that's been happening for years in television. In fact, what very few people realise, that A.A. Gill is actually a sock puppet for Jeremy Clarkson.
Well, it's not problem. There's also astroturfing, which is pretending you're a grassroots movement.
Do you pretend to be lots of people?
Yeah, you pretend to be lots of people, and that there's a grassroots movement saying that something ought to be done.
Oh,
or
so
that you like Sarah Palin or something, and then
that's
you,
clever.
It's called astroturfing.
Hmm? Do these people not have like stuff to do?
Well,
it's a lot of hassle.
It does, and do you not think the disappointing thing is that the internet is hardly the place for implausible lies and money-making scams? I think it's appalling. Best-selling crime writer R.J. Ellery has admitted to sock puppeting, that is, using a pseudonym to leave glowing online reviews of his own books and unfavourable reviews of his rivals. He was caught out by fellow writer Jeremy Duns. R.J. Ellery went by the names Jellybean, Nicodemus Jones, but that doesn't sound made up at all, does it?
No.
And most embarrassingly, Roger. Oh, no, wait a minute. That's his real name. In the end, Mr. Ellery gave himself away by accidentally signing one of his messages, Roger.
Is that true?
The man's a crime writer. I'm guessing the twists in his... I'm guessing the twists in his books are a little disappointing. What do you think? 2 points to Jeremy. Fred, listen to this.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside.
Fred, why do parents make life less boo-boo-ba-ba and more ho-ho-ha-ha?
This was a survey where they discovered that... how parents reacted to amusing situations had an effect on small babies aged, I think, between 6 months and 12 months. Mm. So they put the parents and the children into a situation and maybe dropping a book on the other person's head, and then adults wouldn't react, and nor would the babies. But if the adults reacted laughingly, then the kids would either laugh or spend more time looking at the parents. So their parents' behaviour was reflected in the children. And then they started showing them funny things on TV, or allegedly funny things. They showed them an episode of Take Me Out with Paddy McGuinness. And 9-month-old children were saying, give me the remote, this is shite. But, I mean, of course children are going to behave like their parents. I mean, my youngest, thankfully, is no longer at school, but I remember parents' night going along and the maths teacher looked up at me and he said, oh, you're Fred Macaulay, what are you doing here? And I said, well, the kid there, I said, the first name on your sheet, I said, is Macaulay, that's my son. He said, oh, right. He said, I've seen you hanging about the school, I just didn't know you were a parent. I said, come on, well, careful, I've got a reputation. He said, no, it's just I've never put two and two together. Teacher. So then he goes on and he says, I have to say, your son has got a lovely sense of humour, but he's failed his maths. And I said, well, that sounds to me like one of us isn't doing our job properly.
What I want to know is, these researchers, how do they know that the babies were laughing with the parents and not at them?
Probably before they even talk, they can make jokes with other babies by making noises and things.
What, like?
Some of us are still doing that.
Always. What kind of jokes would babies make? I've pooed myself. I don't know what would you do.
just a lot of noisy squirting, I think.
Yeah. Now, apparently what they do when confronted with a joke, the babies look to two dominant figures to decide if it's safe to laugh. It's like Richard Hammond on Top Gear, I think.
Obviously, your sense of humour changes because there's nothing funnier for a small child than to run between your legs and you go through the tunnel, and the kid goes through and they think that's wonderful. I mean, you tried doing that in the stage at the Apollo.
Kids laugh at everything. That's why I started my career in children's television. Honestly, 10 years, I got laughs just wearing a red jumper and a succession of silly hats. It was fantastic. Scientists in the United States have discovered that babies learn what is funny from watching their parents. Researchers in New England studied the reaction of babies watching normal events, such as someone reading a book, and absurd events, like making Jeremy Hunt health secretary. Part of the experiment involved babies watching a researcher bouncing a picture book on her head and shouting, "Zoop! Zoop!" The idea has since been commissioned for a six-part series on BBC Three. I can tell you that that was 2 points to Fred, and at the end of round two, the scores are Andy and Sarah have got 8 points, but so too have Jeremy and Fred. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from a school newsletter.
Father's Friday, 15th of June. You're invited to come back to school. Come and spend the morning with your son or daughter. Bring your willies in case we visit the woods.
And our thanks to Tony Goff for sending us that. Andy, who went to an awards do and was considered best dressed?
This is Prince Harry.
It is.
He was at an awards do for courageous children who'd overcome illness and adversity. And the story ran that a little lad told the ITN crew that he was going to crack a joke. He was going to go up to Prince Harry and say, "Oh, I'm pleased to see you got some clothes on." Then he'd see if the adults laughed. But Prince Harry got wind of this, and so apparently it was a very nice joshy moment. Prince Harry sort of went down on his haunches and was joking with the child and said, "I heard you had something naughty to say, but I hope you're not going to say it." Which was, you know, it was all very touching and funny. But to Rupert Murdoch, that was censorship. You know, because under Rupert Murdoch's definition, that child was sensitive because we were refused the chance to air and discuss the whole question of Prince Harry and his naked ass in Las Vegas. But he printed the photos, didn't he, in the end, Murdoch?
The son did, yeah.
On the basis that there was a public interest and it was news where they... I can't see, given that they'd gone around the world, those photographs on the internet, it seemed to me the only basis on which they could be newsworthy was if you printed the pictures and it turned out that Prince Harry didn't have an ass. You know, that his thighs were just connected to his hips by elastic. Or, like, if maybe it would be newsworthy if one buttock had a tattoo of a swastika or the other buttock had advertising space on it. I don't know, but...
I have to say, when I read The Sun, I was shocked. I was. The repeated use of the word party as a verb, I thought, was utterly appalling.
What was it? What did he do? I was away. I missed all the...
Actually, the truth is actually much more embarrassing than him being naked. Some tailors had persuaded him that he was wearing clothes of the finest silk. Well, Child Awards, Prince Harry made his first public appearance since being photographed naked in Las Vegas last week. The Sun launched a staunch defence of its right to publish the photographs. This is a crucial test of Britain's free press over images that are indisputably in the public domain elsewhere, said Page 3's Keeley from Essex. Talking about the decision to publish the pictures, David Dinsmore, The Sun's managing editor, said the paper thought long and hard. Oh, come on, you're better than that. 2 points to Andy. Sarah, Mars attacks when a takeaway does what?
Mars, the company,
yes,
have written a letter to a chip shop in Scotland asking them to have a deep-fried Mars bar not listed on their menu. Who knew chip shops had menus? But also, if they were going to have it, they wanted them to say it hadn't been officially endorsed by Mars. But yeah, that's not going to stop people. The sort of people who have a deep-fried Mars bar, "Oh, it's not officially endorsed, I'm not having that then." These are people quite clearly suicidal, even if not very serious about it, because it's quite a slow, painful death.
Have you had one?
No, of course I haven't.
No.
Do I look? I look like the sort that might have tried.
Mars said they don't really want to be associated with anything as unhealthy. Because yeah. Normally you wouldn't have it in batter. You'd have it with some rocket and some Parmesan shaving.
Well, I want to know from Fred, you'll know this. I want to know, who was it picked up a Mars bar, thought, this looks nice. I wonder what it would be like covered in batter.
Fred, is it just chip shops that sell it? I mean, can you get...
I have no idea, Sandy. I've never seen it on a menu. I've never tasted one. I don't know anybody that's ever had a deep-fried Mars bar, and I find this offensive.
I think you're protesting a little bit too much, Fred.
Ironically, isn't Mars the official sponsor of the Scottish football team? They get battered, don't they?
I think it's brilliant, because in Scotland, in curry houses, they do pakora and stuff, and that's quite common, and you can get anything in batter in chip shops. But what's brilliant about that variety is, when it comes to fish, it's not so varied. Because if you go to a chippy in England, it says cod, haddock, rock, plaice, huss. In Scotland, it says fish. How much will that be? Well, that will be some money.
Talking about fish in the chip shop, there's places in England just off the Irish Sea, Sellafield, where you can get leg or breast.
The manufacturer of the Mars bar, Mars Incorporated, have written to the inventors of the deep-fried Mars bar, the Karen Fish Bar in Stonehaven, asking them to point out that the company does not endorse the product. The company's complaint is that battered Mars goes against its healthy message, summed up by the slogan, "A Mars a day is better than a kilo of lard." A deep-fried Mars bar contains 900 calories. To burn that off, you'd have to walk for 11 miles. Although, please, if you do eat battered Mars bars and are planning to walk 11 miles, do please order your ambulance in advance.
They're nice, though. The audience is sitting there thinking, how ridiculous the Scottish are with such disgusting... Oh, that sounds lovely.
As a child, I was very confused by the Mars slogan, because the slogan was, "A Mars a day helps you work, rest and play." And I thought that was an odd order to do those three things in. You work, then you have a rest. Sleep, then you get up and play.
Yeah.
Surely it'd be work, play, rest. I wrote them a letter. They didn't reply. Yeah.
You'd have to say a Mars is best if you work, play and rest. You'd have to... It has to rhyme, doesn't it?
Yeah. Talk about that. Anyway... 2 points to Sarah. Fred, who prefers their partners are the perfect 10?
Everyone.
Yeah.
Apparently, 10 is the ideal number of former lovers for your partner to have, unless they all play for the same football team. But, I mean, who's counting anyway? It's a bit like an airline journey, you know? It's the number of hours you're up in the air rather than the number of destinations, surely. You know, so...
You want
to see somebody
like a man who's been around a bit.
I'm not. I don't know, that might reach double figures, but I've got a gold card.
I didn't understand it. It suggests that 10 is the perfect number of ex-lovers. Is that a week or a month? Is that
total?
Yeah.
Let me just get this straight. It's 10 lovers in a lifetime and 5 portions of fruit and veg a day. Because I keep getting those two things mixed up.
But men didn't want to know how many lovers their partner had, and the researcher's conclusion was that that's because men are more sexually jealous. But it may be that they're just not very interested in those kind of conversations, because match of the day is coming on. Yeah, yeah.
I'll never forget the number of my ex-lovers, because it's also my PIN number.
Blackburn had 500 ex-lovers.
Does he say that?
Apparently.
I think
like, and at number one. Da,
da, da, da, da, da. 500 is a very specific number. Well, I suppose you could think there's a lot, maybe, but...
Well, you probably rounded it up from 7.
Well, I have quite a few notches on my bedpost, I can tell you, but mainly because I use them as footholds to get into bed. So... Research by a dating website has found that the ideal number of lovers to have had is 10. Both men and women are put off people who have had more as they seem promiscuous, while partners who've had fewer seem inexperienced. The research mentioned that Nick Clegg has had more than 30 exes. I know. Though if your definition of ex-relationships is people who used to love him but don't anymore, his magic number shoots up to 60 million. 2 points to Fred. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Hamilton.
This is from Michael Hales, and it's the headlines from BBC Newcastle. And it says, in the news at 6, the Queen visits the North East as part of her Jubilee tour, and road deaths increase for the first time since 2000.
Ms. Milliken.
This is from Mark James. The following poster. Would customers please note that from January the 1st, 2011, the following left luggage charges will apply. £5, large suitcase or rucksack. £4, medium case or hold all. £3, senior citizens.
Mr. Hardy.
I was sent a Twitter message by a lady called Jennifer Clark in Winnipeg in Canada, and it was a picture of her local theatre, the Pantages Theatre, and the sign outside actually said, psychic fair cancelled due to, can anyone guess, unforeseen circumstances. Yeah.
Mr. McCauley.
This is from the Market Reason Mail, from David Pearce, a news item about Andy McNab, the former SAS soldier turned author who may or may not have been referred to earlier on, depending on the edit. This is about Andy McNab, who opened a new library at Brigg and said the following. I'm a big fan of libraries. As an 11-year-old, I did not read a lot. I was later told the very reason I did not read was because I could not read.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Fred have got 12 points, but in a reshuffle of the scores entirely based on my own whims, this week's winners are Andy and Sarah with 13 points. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from The Guardian Weekly sent in by Ingrid Panayi.
Agatha Christie's bronze memorial in Covent Garden will be shaped as a giant book with her bust in the centre.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Andy Hamilton, Sarah Millican, Jeremy Hardy and Fred McCauley. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Andy Walton, Roger Crooks and Gareth Gwynne, with additional material by Kevin Corr and Tom Neenan. The producer was Ben Walker.